Manyang, what do you remember very best from your growing up years in the Sudan?
Well, I don't remember a lot growing up in Sudan, but what I do remember is growing up in Ethiopia, because I lived Sudan when I was very young, like 4 years old. So that's all the things I remember, and not, I don't remember too much about Sudan, because my home and where I grew up became a refugee camp. And that's what I remember by living at a refugee camp.
Tell me about that, please.
Well, refugees camp is like a place, it's like in this room where you are putting in, and you didn't go anywhere. All you are waiting there is UNHCR food they bring to you every month, so you can eat it. You only eat one meal a day. So if you have no food, they give you one food a month. So if you run out of food before months, bad luck to you. And you only have one meal a day, that's what you eat. They only keep you, want to keep you alive, and that's the only thing they have. Because a lot of people have no hope there in this refugee camp. So, yeah.
So you're rationing. They'll give you this much and no more, and then you have to figure out for the next 30 or 31 days, that's what you're eating.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people put their food together. And that's what, you know, when they bring all their food together and they kind of trying to find a way to share it, this actually help more than, yeah. So you can, if you're trying to go by yourself, it's difficult. Yeah, it's difficult.
And I understand that you lived there, do I have this correct, from the time you were 4 until you were 17?
Yeah, I lived there in a refugees camp for 13 years. So yeah, I lived one camp to another, and for that, just living refugees life until I was allowed to come to America in 2006.
Tell me how that came about for you, please.
Well, I get lucky. This is my life story. Get picked up on a newspaper. When I was younger, at age of 4, I was bitten by cobra in my hands. Yeah, I was so painful, but actually during the road, it got a lot of newspaper attention when my hand was bitten by cobra. And then a group of people that I lived with put the electric shock in my hands, and then it burned my hands, and so it become very confusing to the lot of people. And that's how actually my life started get into some of the local newspaper there. And when some of the newspaper write about me, the people at UNHCR discover that, I guess they feel sorry, so they kind of help me come to America. They find a sponsor who can sponsor me and come to America, and that's how that come about. Yeah, there was about 4,000 of us who were brought to America starting 2001 to 2006.
What was that like for you, leaving Ethiopia and coming to, I believe, Richmond, Virginia?
Oh my God, there was a lot of things that I was so scared about, you know. I didn't know there was black people in America. And this is, be honest, I can be, because I mean, I thought that, whoa, they don't like Martin Luther King. How are they going to like me? You know, like I read about Martin Luther King, Malcolm X is very popular actually in Africa, because he had a lot of book, but people like him there. So we say, if they don't like Malcolm X, and he was born there, how are they going to like me? But they have to send me a counselor. She's African-American. She lives in Maryland. She become my mentor now. So she had to talk to me. She said, well, there was a time when it's really, really bad, but it's not that bad like that. Now you go to school and you will enjoy life and things like that. And that's how I come to America. It's not easy as it look, but I had to have a lot of things that, you know, make me feel comfortable about it. Yeah. Even though I was struggling, I feel like I'd be serving Africa than I'd be serving America. You know, yeah, it's one of those things.
Besides discovering that we're multicultural over here, what were some of your first impressions of the U.S. after getting here? What did you really like, and what was a real culture shock or something you had to adjust to?
Oh, I am shocked. I have three things that shocked me the most. One thing is, the first thing is, I watched The Bachelor show. And The Bachelor show is one guy, he get a lot of girl in the room. He can pick one girl out of them, and I can see them fight them every day. And out of those girls, I already have two girls that I like. And I'm like, why she didn't take the girl I like? So I'm like, I'm fighting inside of me, and I'm like, no, I won't take the girl I like. So, and then in Sudan, when he didn't take the girl, I said, well, he could just marry all. And people were like, are you crazy? This is America. You can't marry. In Sudan, you get married to white, three white, as long as you have money and they love you, people don't worry about that. You can marry them. That's what I thought. And then another shock was when I joined track in high school. A good friend of mine she ran track with me. And when we're running a track, she got a very long hair, and she pulled the thing that she tied her hair out. And she said, "Do I look good? Can I run like that?" I say, "No, you will fall." And now she's really mad because one thing about that is, I didn't know in America you don't tell thing like that. You have to lie a little bit, you know, to be impressed. I don't know. I didn't know that part of lie. So she just ran away. She didn't talk to me for 2 weeks. And I didn't know what I does. Because where I live, if somebody asks you, they mean, like, it's honest. Like, you have to be honest whatever they ask you for. But in America, you never always be honest. Because it's not a kind thing that they want you to be honest about. It's a double standard issue. So you just say, okay, but things, you know. And I was confused, you know. But now I used to it. I just say, yeah, but, you know, it's funny to me. But so when I learned the culture, the next day some people asked me the same question. I said, yeah, you look gorgeous, you look pretty, you look all this kind of things that, you know, people, you know, because I'm trying to learn culture now. I'm learning how it works. And this is one of the things that shocked me the most. And since it's like a lot of things more than this, but, you know, I get used to it. I learned about the food, you know, and food. People go tell me about the food they eat. And it was kind of insulting for me when I first learned about it. Because people go home and they say, hey, you know, I went home yesterday, I ate this food, and they just talk about how wonderful the food is. But where I come from, like my refugee camp, people don't have food. And if you just have to come here and tell them what you eat, that is very insulting and disrespecting. So I feel like, okay, people insulting me right now or what? So it was a cultural shock. So I made my decision and I ate some food and I went to one of the friends. I told her, I had this one. And she said, tell me some more. I'm like, how the hell did you just say, tell me some more? Because I thought she was going to be mad. It's not, people don't get mad about that. Like, they just love you to talk about food. And she says, you know, that's good. You know, those are things that are a cultural shock for me. Other than that, I had a good time, you know.
And what were some of the good times?
Yeah, I had a good time. You know, I hang out with the good. I'm lucky enough to have some good friends that I hang out with, go to movie theater at one time, you know, hang out. You know, I enjoy, you know, American people are good. They are the good people that will, when they say they will support something, they do it. And that's one thing that, you know, American heard. They have that kind of promise things that they follow up with it. You know, I mean, not everybody will follow with everything. But some people will follow up, even if they give it up some more, they will try to follow up a little bit. You know, and that's one thing that shocked me the most, you know. I didn't expect things like that, you know. So, and I had a good time going to movies and to go see some shows that I hadn't got TV to see before. You know, theaters, you know, go there, you know, hang out, play tracks and all this kind of thing. So it was a good time for me.
And how did you come to found HHSP?
Well, when you come to America, there's a double thing that come to your way. People think you got a lot of money. Even though a lot of people who are younger, my age, they resistant some coming to America a little bit, but they know that, oh yeah, you got a lot of money. So one thing I faced into at the first, people were like, oh, can you send me money? I want to buy this. I want to buy books. So they create anything that, you know, that has make them ask me to give them money. And you know, so, and those people are my friend. I live with them for 13 years. You know, a lot of people call them lost boy of Sudan, but it'd be not good for me. I don't call them lost boy. You know, I call them friends. I call them, you know, family. And it hurt me that, you know, if I can't help them, I'm in position to help. So that's what I started the UMAN Helping Sudan, to address, you know, mass shortage of food, help people help themselves, all this issue, you know, water, and you know, farming, training them with the trading school, all the things that we do. That's what the UMAN Helping Sudan is about, just to help them with sustainability.
Let's look at some of the things that you're doing right now with Humanity Helping Sudan Project. You briefly touched on them, the farming and what that's doing, first of all.
Well, the farming is one of the bigger things. You know, we start this project with a chicken program and a fishing program. I get some of my friends from Virginia say, you know what, let's try something. Let's try and help. So we have at least about $5,000. And then we went to Africa. We just buy a bunch of fishing and a net. And then we get somebody to make them. And then we went fishing. And we get a lot of fish. And now the local, oh, can I have net? So we just begin distributing net. And now people are getting to go to Nile, the Nile River, one of the longest rivers in Africa. They have a lot of fish. You can get any fish you want, even if you want a crocodile, you can get them. You want any animal there, you can get anything you can eat there, they have it. All they need is a net, a fishing net. And that's what I say, well, this is a simple thing we can find. You know, I can ask my friend from college. And sure enough, I had a good friend enough who can raise $10,000 in college level, then I don't really up to trouble, like you have a lot of, you know, hard time trying to find it. So that's what we did. And then the next thing is chicken foreground. The chicken foreground actually was another very popular thing because you can give 2 to 3 chicken. In next year, those chicken will turn to 200 chicken. 200 chicken. And you know how much those chicken cost from the beginning? $10, $5, $3, $2. That's how much they cost.
$2 for a chicken over here. Cost of a latte.
Yeah, it's almost $2 because it's like $5 per Ethiopians, 10 per Ethiopians. It's like, sometimes it's like 1.5 cents or something like that. It's not that much money. And that's a very small thing. But if you grow up chickens, there's one guy, his name's Achinapi. He grew 400 chicken in 1 year. It's like $100. A lady give me $100. I say, I want to put this into use. And I called the lady back. I say, I can give you your $100 back if you want. She said, no, I'm so happy I was helping. But I just want, yeah, because $100. But I was so happy to just, this guy put a much work to it. He built now a small room like this room, and he put chicken into it. One on top, beneath, and the other one right there. So they just give him food in the morning. He leaves them outside and they eat, warm and all this thing they eat. I was so happy. I was very happy to see that happening. And then come the community garden. Lucky enough, the whole food sponsored us and help us with the land. We actually get land because the Whole Food helped us buy the land. And now we have a land to farm in. So people get their own food from there. You know, people actually offer us, they want a land. You know, then people get their tomatoes. They think they can grow their corns, millets, sorghums, all those things they can grow in the garden. So you see, the thing gets go smaller and smaller. And oh, now we have trading school. We can train these people how to go to farm so they can learn how to farm. That's what we do.
Tell me about what went through your head the first time that you were back in Africa catching fish and helping your people.
Oh, I was so happy at first. I took some of my close friends at the time in college. So when we went there, we didn't expect that, you know, we're going to do something bigger. But we expected that, you know, we will do a little bit as we can help, you know, just get some friend. And the people who started, to be honest with you, are a friend of mine from the beginning, you know. And that's what actually get the Humanity Helping Sudan get going, because they had the respect for me. And I fight so much hard. I tell them that. I say, I fight so hard to get $5,000. And all you got to do is ruin it and don't do nothing about it. I'll be dead. I'll kill myself. I don't want that. And they work so hard for that. And I thank them every day because, you know, they show the world what I believe, like what I could see, you know, like, you know, you can go now, it's become physical. And I come emotional when I talk about these things because it makes me happy, you know, it's making me what I do important to me. So, and that's when I go to Africa, first time I met them, they talk to me, asking me about America, about the life the people live, you know, because people, they know what swimming pool and they're rich and all that. They know not everybody in America is rich and have a lot of money, no, but there's a lot of good people who are rich and they have their support and time. It's, you know, the people that raise money for me don't really have money, but they just have time to make, to has other people's and will to help me with what I want to do, and they believe in me. So, you know, that's one thing that I was so happy. But the second time was good, because at that time I had to meet my mother after 17 years of separation. It was wonderful idea, because I take a lot of this test, like swapping DNA test through American Red Cross 32 times. It's a negative every time. They say, oh, hey, we don't find it. We didn't find your mother, and we don't. But if they finally find my mother, and I talk to her on the phone through the American Red Cross headquarters. So when I go there in 2012, I get to meet her personally, my own mother, that I didn't see for all this time. And she left me. She didn't leave me. She separated with me since I was 4 years old. And now, when I go there, I was 23. Yeah, yeah.
How proud was your mom?
She cried to death. She killed all the food she can cook, all the food she can cook. She called everybody in the village. She called all her gods she can call and pray to death and everything. But, you know, I was so happy to see her, you know. And I find my father died in 91. It was not... I feel sorry, but it didn't hurt me as much as I thought it would hurt me. But, you know, she told me my father died. And that's, I have a sister, so she's in Uganda right now.
Did you get to meet your sister as well?
I get to meet my sister, talk to her, yeah.
How long did you get to spend with your mom?
I stayed there for, I think, I didn't stay in the compound, but they come where I live every other day. And then we stayed, because we worked too as well. We went do some work about the project thing. But they come during every weekends, and then I go there the next weekend, because people that go with me want to go too, and just have sit there and walk and talk, and because she lived like a little village, so we just like go there.
And you're going to be traveling back to Ethiopia and Sudan this summer?
Yes, I am. I think we got lucky. We were selected to come to World Cup to present our idea. We're going to meet the board, a group board of World Cup people. Hopefully they donate us money or they support our mission. So after that World Cup, I think by the end of July, I should be in Ethiopia by that time. So
tell me about what your goals will be when you get over there. You've already fed a number of people. You've got cows, chickens, and you're teaching people how to farm. What's next?
Well, that's going to be the goal. And the next goal is a mission now is I have a problem with a company that go to Africa and they just grab lands. Now, there's people like a country like China, India, and all this Asian country, they go, even some company in America, some company in British, they go grab land. They may grab land because they think that in 10 years there may be oil in this place area, and if they buy the land now, if there was something found in 10 years, the oil will be them. Or they go buy land, they thought that there may be gold in the ground, and then they just keep it there. And then just people are suffering. And there's no such a thing called international law. The international law actually was invented by America and British. Basically, they invented for their interests. Anything international law, if you look at it clearly and you read all the book, the international law, it's actually British interest pulling away from other country. The way they're pulling away in 60, they invent a law so that nobody can sue them for whatever they has done, whatever damage they has done. The same thing as America, they pull away because they've been in international law around bombs. You know, whatever happened to other president cannot carry on to other president because it's a politic that they don't want, you know, somebody have to deal with somebody throw a bomb to other person before this person didn't get to answer this question. So the international law was never based in Africa. And that's a crazy thing. In 2012, we done a lot of big campaign about the land grab because people grabbing land is like crazy. Like crazy, you won't believe how many they forcing people out of their land, you know. And there's no law to protect that, you know. All the law are also written in English. So you come to village and you tell people this is international law, what they gonna know? They don't speak English. How are you gonna tell them they know international law? they don't have English. They have their own language, and nobody written. The only thing you can find is they asked Nelson Mandela to write article about it, but it is not law. Yes, he talk about his opinion and why the law was not good, but it was not law. You can't really judge anything, because really in Africa now, if you have money, you can literally go and buy lands for free. Like the corporation, there ain't nobody, nothing you have to do. So it's hard, and that's what I want to do.
When you get over there, how do you fight that? It's people's food and livelihood versus the big corporation.
Yeah, you fight that through people. You fight that through also the international court, you know. I had done a lot of articles, and I had a lot of people that had helped me in 2012. We done 500,000 people had signed the petitions. So it was good. And a lot of people get attention through that period of time. And that's what I want to do again. So I want to just form another team by the end of the year who can join that fight against and bring it back, you know, so people like State Department, like Congress, can sign a law that protect people that are poor. And the only thing they have is a land. You know, the only thing they ever own in this world is land. And that's what, you know, we don't ask corporation to take it away.
What if someone listening hears what you've just said and says, I really want to help, I really want to be part of the team, I really want to sign this petition? How do they get in touch with you?
They can just email me or go to humanhelpingsudanproject.org, call the number there, and then, or they go to website and contact me, or my information. I'm also on Facebook, Manyang Redcare. Also, I'm Twitter. You can call up, follow us on Twitter. Wherever you can get, you have a way to get us on our, if you go to our website, there will be somebody help, but you will finally get to me. So, yeah, whatever your question is. Yeah.
HumanityHelpingSudanProject.org, Manyang Rethker, and where do they email you?
They can email me at manyangres@humanityhelpingsudanproject.org. Yeah, or they can say director@humanityhelpingsudanproject.org. If you go on website, you will see there will be email on the website.
Now, you need people to get involved. What else do you need in terms of support?
Well, we need a lot of things. We need one. No, I don't want to say a lot of things because scare people.
Let's scare them a little bit.
Yeah, we do need people that support our mission. We do need people that they are financial means, they donate to us. But we do need people that can create awareness about the issue that happening in Sudan right now in December 2013. 500,000 people has been displaced in southern Sudan. They have no place to live, shelter, water, all this issue. So if there's a medical doctor, they can go there and help with us. Whatever they can do, even if they just create awareness about that issue, that would be helpful. You know, and that's what I want people to get into it and help us with it.
And in fact, we started to talk about the three prongs of what you're doing. We have only talked about agriculture. What else are you doing?
Right now, that's agriculture. We're doing farm coffee things. So we want to bring coffee to part of our sustainability is to maybe bring coffee from Ethiopia to here to keep the sustainability going. So, yeah. But right now, the bigger issue is to create much awareness about the region. And money is also important, so people who want to donate, they can.
And let's talk a little bit about the people whom they're helping. You've already told me that honesty is very important in your culture. You've already told me that polygamy is a part of the culture, and that the people are very friendly, very kind. There are a lot of silly ideas, to put it politely, about Africa that you examine on one of your videos. Tell me about the culture that you know.
Well, there's a lot of things, you know, people always, you know, they take life simple. You know, like here in America, people care about how they look more. You know, it's concerning. In Africa, they don't, like, there's no such a thing called, you know, people don't care about how they look more. You come that way, you come that way. Like, nobody really gonna care about how, like, maybe you care about, I don't want to say you don't care, but it's not a big thing to find where, you know, you get worried. You get worried about how you look. You know, like, it's not kind of thing that people have. People just take life simple. You know, all they need is something like a food and just live life simple. That's what is culture. That's what people gather themselves. Coffee, one of the things that make people gather themselves. So that's how simple life it is. That's what they wanted.
And it's kind of scary that you have a post on your Facebook page that says this could possibly be the toughest year in terms of famine, in terms of people going hungry in your area.
Yes, yes. And that's one of the hardest part, because right now people are not grow food. And when they do not grow food, the problem become, you know, they don't, like, the part that's stopping people growing food, because there's war now between two countries, like between the in southern Sudan itself. So people actually come to be refugee. And I read this article on New York Times with its email to me, and I'm like so shocked about it. How many people are gonna go hungry by the end of the year? There is no food, and it's gonna be the first ever famine ever happened since 1980s. The Ethiopians. So we just worry about that right now.
When you say how many are going to go hungry, are we talking about millions?
50,000 up. Like they say possible 50 children will die, and then 500,000 will go hungry. Yeah, without food.
So now is the time for people to get involved and do things.
That's exactly what I want people to do. So, you know, you can create people. You don't really have to have money. Sometimes you can create money. You can create awareness, and also it will help you. Everything you do at some way to help you somehow. You feel better if there's nothing ever happened to you about what you do. But you can create awareness about the issue, you know. It's not that you have money that would count more, you know. But what you do is what counts, you know. You just show your strength of what you can do. You do the best you can do to help. But that's what I want people to do. You know, some people say, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have money, you know. But there's a lot of things you can do without money. You can help with the project. You have a connection. You can tell people you know. You can share the information on your Twitter or Facebook, which is free. It didn't even cost you anything. Just only the people can read about it. The less they can do is not like it on the Facebook. Yeah. The bad thing they can do is not like it on the Facebook. And next time you will get another post that they may like. So that's how you can create awareness about it.
Would you tell me about how many people that you estimate that you've reached so far with Humanity Helping Sudan versus how many that you want to reach?
Well, in southern Sudan, we reached about 40,000 people with a farm and water and all this thing that we've done. We want to reach more. That's what we want to go for it right now.
What's your dream?
Just to help with the hunger. You know, people should know that there's food in Africa. There's 250,000 acre of lands in Africa just sitting down there. Nobody farm them. Just because some corporation buy them and they don't use it. And that's a hard. And that's what people should fight for, to get their own food. And they should see, you know, I don't want to be hungry. I want to get my food. And the farmer should be allowed to farm. You know, food come from the ground. Everybody that ate the food, somebody grow that food. You know, it's not just, it don't come from the sky. It just, somebody grow it. And everybody, every human being survive because they eat something. One point, one way today, somebody will eat something just to get themselves going. And somebody, that farmer grow that food. You may never even know them, but they grow it. They work so hard to grow that food. And if we want, like, all this country send money to Africa, all year, like they call it aid. Yeah, if you want help, why don't you just buy them a farm, land, and tell them, you know, you country, this country, you help your people. What do you need? What equipment do you need to get the food going? Instead of just using, you give it this year and each year, and then you say, oh, well, we want help next year. No, you're not helping. There's a political, you making people so they keep quiet about all the things you're doing, distraction. Because, you know, they don't discover how you do a different thing. You know, and it's sad. And it's hard.
We should mention that Humanity Helping Sudan Project does not have administrative costs, according to your website.
Yeah. This is still true right now.
So every dime goes to?
Every money that we get go to the directly to whatever project that we're working on. Like right now we're working on a farm, the human help, the money that you donate will go directly to the farm.
Tell me about the medical needs over in Ethiopia and Sudan.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I can talk to this for hour and hour. Well, the medical need in Ethiopia is very critical right now. Because then that's what we were trying to do to see, but we were unsuccessfully getting people that can put the medical support together. People who are expert, people who can help us raise the money through that front. But we still, you know, put it on our website, so everybody who are interested in that, they can read it. And if they like it, how they do, and they can get the people rally up again and say, we'd be happy. We'd be happy, yeah.
It's a huge shock to read about children getting measles and dying from that when over here we have the vaccinations and, you know, Johnny gets the measles, oh no, he's going to be in bed for 2 weeks, whereas over there...
It's just, you know, some people are lucky in life, or some people, I don't know. I don't know, because some people who are dying now, they don't know what they're dying for. Yeah, and some people, they just don't know why they're fighting for. And they don't know why they get sick. You know, it's just bad sometimes. You know, I just feel unfair to people. They are born in the wrong place at the wrong times, in the wrong moments. And they had to suffer things they don't know. You know, I had to suffer things I don't know. I don't know why I had to lose my parents. I don't know. And those children, you know, when I go there and see those children suffering for inhumanity to the mankind, you know, it's that inhumans to the mankind. You know, you created destructions to other human beings that bad to the point where they will leave suffering for the rest of the century and century and century. And then there's no unity. You know, it's just hard. It's sad to look at it in a kind of human way, humanity way. But only inhuman people can do that because they benefit from it, money. You know, sometimes, you know, people like the bad stuff because, you know, they benefit from it. Some organization will benefit from it, you know, destruction that happenings. And that's just hard. You know, they act, some or people act like they don't like it, but they do because that's how, oh, they can do whatever they want to do. But it just hurt me. You know, like, you have to put all those people in the hard situation so you can create some kind of funny way to, you know, it's not right for me. It's not right. And I felt bad when I just had to see these things. You know, you make somebody suffer for something they have never done, they have not account for. Children, if you go to refugee camp, they die every day. And some woman give birth inside the UN compound because there's no place to give a birth at. They give children, then they die. You know, dehydrations, no drinks, no nothing to give them warm water or just to put warm them up to get them food, nothing there. And it's difficult, they're dizzy, you know, it's just painful, really painful, and I hate to see that.
There isn't a word for that. I'm thinking it's an atrocity, but that's really not a strong enough word.
Yeah, I just don't, it's just hard, it's just very difficult for people that say, you know, I want to do humanitarian work, but through my heart, you know, I don't want to create inhumanity, like something that, you know, the dignity of mankind should be respected. You know, however people look, however people they are, you should, as long as they're living, you should respect the dignity of what they live. If they want to live their life simple, let them live it simple. If they want to be technology and smart, let them live the life the way they want to be smart. But we should not go and create this kind of problems and then, you know, so... It's just sad reality.
As you fight that reality as an individual, how far away are you from becoming a lawyer?
Well, soon, so I should be not too much, but maybe next 2 years, 3 years. So I should get my thing.
Excellent. Congratulations. We don't want to forget to mention the award for which you're being considered. This will be, what, your third one since 2008?
Yeah, I'm getting awards. So it means... It has been an exciting project for me. You know, I get a lot of people who call me every day and explain how they want help, you know, how they want to support the project, you know. It makes me happy. You know, they call me and talk to me, how they so move about thing I do in the health. know, but you know, getting our word, it's not our ultimate goal to be just getting our word, but we want to get the message out. You know, we want to actually do things. You know, I don't want UMaine Helping Sudan to be just an organization that just get a word. You know, our word, yes, we happy when we get a word. You know, it create much awareness for us, and it would cost us a lot of money to create that awareness. And we want that, and we want that award to be there. But our goal should not be focusing on how to get our award. You know, that's not my UMaine Helping Sudan. It's, you know, it's humanitarian that want to just help people.
And we should also mention how you're going to be helping people with building, I believe, a clinic over there.
That's what we're trying to be doing, working on. Right now, a group of Southern Sudanese diaspora. So we're working to trying to build a clinic. It's been a harder part to get it together, but I think we're getting somewhere, and hopefully by this summer we should have something going on the ground.
In addition to funds for that, are you going to need volunteers? Are you going to be...
We do need a volunteer. This is a new project. You know, it has not had a lot of people that take it up already. So we need people that could volunteer for it, that could already have a little bit knowledge about how to help the location. So that's what we need to be doing.
When you start a mission like Humanity Helping Sudan Project, what are some of the biggest challenges you face, and what are some of the best parts?
Wow, the challenges is always, you know, when I start this, nobody know me. You know, the only people in my college and the people are my friends. I'm not famous, I would say that. And it was hard enough to get people's attention, you know, to get them from their human interests. Because human will... One thing the human have, if you say word interest, they will follow it. If something interests them, they will follow it. If something that's not interesting enough, they hear it, but it's not. It's not there. Sudan is like 7,000 miles away, 10,000 miles away. So it's not something that, you know, get people interesting enough. You know, like, yeah, Sudan, yeah, they have suffering. But I'm suffering here too, you know. So it's a hard part. It's a challenge that you have to face. You have to convince people, please help us. Help us, you know. The world is one time once. You know, we're all human beings. We all, and all these things you have to do to get people's attention. This is a hard part. And it's an excited part, because when you do get people that help you, and then you feel excited and happy because you finally succeed. There's people who are listening. There's people who can be there to hear the problem and help you fight it. Because, you know, when everybody fight the issue, now it become broader. You know, nobody can pinpoint you to just come to you. It just have to come to everybody that involved in it. And now it become something they can't just stop except do something about it. And that's what you really want. But it's harder to convince to people to help. And that's the hard part that they had the challenge for.
You've unfortunately made the point that if it doesn't directly affect people, it's absolutely true. We don't think about it.
Yeah, and that's a very, very true, because people don't respond to things that I'm not relation to them. You know, we look things based on our relationship with them. We look thing on based how I feel about it. How would you done about it? Even, you know, you listen to the song. If a song don't relate to how you feel in life, you just skip it. That song didn't even do anything for me. But if you hear a song that relate to your life and close to you, you just like the song and you be interested to the person. You say, oh man, I love this person. You never even met them, you know? Like, you never met them. And that's a kind of human interest. It's something rich to you. It's rich to you. You are interesting to look at more. But if it's not related directly to you, you don't pay attention to it.
It's true, and I didn't even think about that in terms of music.
Yeah.
What's been one of your absolute best experiences since you started Humanity Helping Sudan Project?
Oh, meeting all this celebrity, meeting all... yeah. And I get to meet a lot of wonderful friends who just stick with me, follow every day. And that's the good things, so...
What would you say has been one of the most important lessons you've learned about leadership since starting Humanity Helping Sudan Project?
Oh, being patient. You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, even though Humanity Helping Sudan not done a lot of good things, not everything go in my way the way I plan it sometimes. You know, we sometimes come short. We have to find other alternative. sometimes we run out of blend here. But and sometimes we, when I come to this project, I have no experience. So I just started from my heart. So, you need experience and everything. You need to like do things, how to get people the shorter. When I usually write a long paragraph of message, how I felt. And that's the good things, but it's not even helping me because people don't like to read it. Like a big paragraph emails on their computer, they may just delete it out. I didn't learn that from the beginnings. How to make myself, I just emotionally feel like I want help and then talk too much to things that didn't even make sense at the time. There's a lot of things that, it was challenging.
5 sentences usually tops on an email is what people read.
Yeah. And I didn't know that. I thought, people would like to hear, but, I'm learning it. I'm learning it now. Now I become short to the point where, I kind of miss a lot of things. Yeah.
And you said you ran out of volunteers, which is a problem that a lot of people have with a 501. What do you do? How do you motivate people to volunteer?
Well, you just tell them, please help us. Help us go through this and help us with the project. You can do some things. And I know we don't have money to pay everybody, but we want to help people that just, that can help us get where we want to go.
You've talked, and I've found that really fun in your video about the silly questions about Africa. But what would you like people to know about Africa, about your people, about you, and what you're doing?
I post silly questions, but I'm glad you really watch the video. It's funny because when I go to things, people watch something on a TV and they say, whoa, how is a lion in Africa? Do you speak silly? Like, silly question is about, I'm just want to answer people's question, but a lot of things that I was answered, I was asked for. But there's a lot of things that are confusing in Africa. But not everybody had the same problem like that. There's a lot of people who don't even, they ask you like they come from America. They ask you, oh, so what happened there? Why you got here? Yeah, and they live in Africa. If you go to like Addis Ababa, some part of Ethiopia, they didn't know what happened. If you go to Nairobi, Kenya, Kibera, some of them don't know what happened. They just say, oh, I heard they got war there.
Only about 20 plus years.
Oh, they got war there now? It's like it just happened yesterday. Oh, no, I didn't know. I didn't know they had war there. So did we go hell? Yeah, Botswana like that. They say, oh, man, Sudan is a bigger country. How are they going to get war big like that? Oh, we got war, man. it's not just America, but America has in a kind of funny way that is so crazy. Like do people talk like this? Like everybody naked, they have no clothes, they have this. How did it just some of the silly question they ask. A lot of funny, yeah.
How do you maintain a sense of humor when people ask such ridiculous things?
Well, you just have to understand that, some people, they don't really know. They don't really know because, the problem about this is people look Africa through charity. And that's what they see. When people that take a video, they go to see tech for the charity perspective. They don't be going like to sit. I mean, I'm not saying Africa is rich, but not everybody just have that, the charity perspective. Like this, for example, in this city, you can find people that are homeless in this area. So if you just go there and the charity will do homeless work, and then they just take all that part of it, then they call it in Pasadena. And then they take it to Africa. They repeat that one for many years. People are going to think, I'm not going to go to Pasadena. They get poor over there, man. They got see on television. But that's what it has been here. A lot of people, all the poor that has ever bring from Africa are always through charity, through, somebody helping somebody. And that's what things, it's true. It's true. They say a lot, half a percent, like you can say 60% of the people are poor. But that's people who don't even have to worry about food. Even if there was no food growing for 40 years, they're not going to worry, but they can buy the food as long as it's expensive or not expensive. I don't know how much they get money, but regardless, they do have money. to buy whatever they can. So that's just a perspective that, you know, well, I mean, we know that America, a lot of people have money and they sustain themselves much in a better quality, good governments and all this. But not everybody in Africa just have poor and have no money, you know. So, yeah.
If you could have anything happen at all 10 years from today, where would you be in terms of HHSP and in terms of your personal goals of becoming a lawyer and what you want to accomplish?
I just want to see if we can get more lands so people can actually grow their own food and not to be distributing to the food. I just want people to just grow their own food. You know, if you can train the people local like that, and that 10 years from now, if I can reach all these people, just grow their own food, that's one of the best things that I could do for them. And that's one thing, and if I can help make the law happen, they actually understand and they can read in local language and they can read, you know, nobody can force you out of your home. Like no company can have the power to force you without an investment, like without paying you something. You know, they should pay you to live where you live because that's what you own and that's what you have. That's what I want.
Manyang, thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.